Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. For your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for immediate unloading and loading of passengers only. No parking in the White Zone.
That's right. It's a Baggage Claim Monday. Taping the podcast here at beautiful Gate B2 in Cleveland after our Sunday night baseball game, the Cleveland Indians beating the Philadelphia Phillies. And I got to tell you, and Troy Farkas, of course, producing as he does every day back in Bristol. Troy, I kind of feel sorry for any Browns fans that I know are sort of crawling out of their holes this morning and are probably a little bit hungover, probably really devastated by how the Browns lost their the end against the Rams last night here.
Yeah, I was asleep, so I didn't see what happened, but I heard that the Browns had a very questionable play call at the end of the game, and they lost, and yeah, I feel bad for the Cleveland Browns fans once again.
Yeah, I'm looking at all the people passing here as I'm getting ready to tape the podcast, and I'm seeing a lot of hoodies and a lot of sunglasses, okay? A lot of hoodies, a lot of sunglasses, people not wanting to show their face. People trying to protect themselves from the light. All right, let's get to what happened on a really busy baseball weekend. On Sunday, the Astros faced the Angels with an opportunity to clinch the American League West, and George Springer had himself a day.
And Springer, blast off, left field, he did it! That's three for George! Just like that, Springer connects for the third time.
That's right. Steve Sparks, Sparksy, KBME 790 AM, George Springer with three homers in the game, and that was in the bottom of the fourth inning. The Astros rolled along. Justin Verlander with his 20th win. This is what it sounded like at the end.
That ball's popped up. Abraham Toro in foul territory, and the Astros have won the American League West for the third consecutive year. 13-5, the final score. Justin Verlander wins his 20th, and the celebration begins.
And Todd Kalas gave that, of course, on AT&T Sportsnet Southwest. Justin Verlander spoke with AT&T Sportsnet Southwest in the aftermath.
Pretty awesome, man, to be able to win my 20th on the day we clinch. You know, those moments don't happen too often. So last time I was on the mound and we clinched the division, some good things happened in October. So hoping for much of the same. Call me old school, but I like wins. You know, I think throughout the course of the season, if I'm out there and eating innings and pitching well, I think the wins kind of come, whether you don't win all the ones you should or lose some you should, whatever it happens. I appreciate wins. You know, when I go at home, when I go home at night and lay my head on my pillow, I feel a lot better if I win than when I lose. So, and that's a testament to these guys. I mean, you can't win 20 without a great, great supporting cast. These guys are unbelievable. They've been incredible all year, from defense to offense to, I mean, every facet of the game. These guys are really special and blow my mind every night.
Justin Verlander, who's going to finish either first or second for the American League Cy Young Award for 2019. Houston, of course, trying to get the best record in baseball, have home field advantage throughout the postseason. They're vying with the Yankees, who face the Blue Jays, and New York had a good day.
Deep to left center. See ya! A home run for Judge. Yeah, he can still hit. It's 1-0 Yanks.
Michael Kay on the YES Network. This game day started with CC Sabathia throwing out the first pitch to his mom, Margie, in his last regular season appearance at Yankee Stadium. The Yankees went on to win 8-3. The Dodgers, also in that race for the best record in baseball, faced the Rockies. And how about Hyunjin Ryu doing it at the plate?
Ryu on 0-2 with a fly ball to center field. That's well hit. Hampton going back to the wall. He leaps, and it is gone. His first home run of the year evens the score at 1.
And the Dodgers' rally would continue in that inning.
Bellinger with a fly ball to right. Well hit on its way. And a grand slam home run for Cody Bellinger. Home run 46. 114 runs batted in. Dodgers trailed 1-0 into the bottom of the fifth. and they have played in five in the bottom half. It's 5-1.
Those calls from the great Charlie Steiner, AM 570 LA Sports. The Dodgers went on to win 7-4. Cody Bellinger seemingly righting the ship after his early September slump. As of this morning, the Astros were the record of 102-54, a half game ahead of the Yankees at 102-55, the Dodgers at 156. So Houston right now would have home field advantage throughout the postseason. In the AL wildcard races, Oakland has looked great of late, but on Sunday, didn't go so well.
He might have another one. There's a drive, deep right field, well-struck ball by Calhoun. It's way out of here. Second home run of the ballgame for Willie Calhoun, the native of Vallejo, California. Playing in front of the home folks, clubs his 20th home run of the year, and he gives Texas a 5-0 lead.
And the Rangers, Troy, your Rangers going to roll to an 8-3 win. That sounded from 105.3 The Fan. How about Texas stepping up on Sunday?
Yeah, Buster, the Rangers about to throw havoc into the American League wildcard chase. I love it.
Or not. Red Sox face the Rays. The Rays, of course, start today in the second wildcard spot in the American League. But Christian Vasquez took them down in the top of the first.
And there's a swing and a drive deep to left by Vasquez. Way back, and it is long gone. First ball swinging. It's 4-0 Red Sox as Christian Vasquez deals number 22. He really crushed it. A no-doubter. 4-0 Red Sox and 69 RBIs for Christian.
Joe Castiglione, WEI 93.7 FM. Boston went on to win 7-4. We had the Indians and Phillies on Sunday Night Baseball, as I mentioned. And in the bottom of the fifth inning, it was 1-1. Oscar Mercado came to the plate, two runners on base, and two out.
Here's the 0-2. Swing and a high fly ball deep left field. That one back there on its way, and it is gone. Over the high wall in left field. How about Oscar Mercado? Homered last night. Homers again here tonight. And the Indians have a 4-1 lead.
The legend Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio with that call. And later on, Yasiel Puig blew it open.
Here's a 2-2. Swing and a rocket right center field, and that'll touch down and bang up against the wall. It's going to clear the bases. In to score is Lindor, Mercado as well. Santana to the plate, and the ball squirts out of Real Muto's glove. Santana dives in safely, and Puig with a three-run double, and all of a sudden it's an 8-1 game.
And Cleveland will win the game 10-1 at the end of the day. Oakland, two games ahead of the Rays and Cleveland, who are tied. We'll be talking with Tim Kirkchin coming up about the microphone sound that we captured from Oscar Mercado when he hit that home run. It was really funny and really cool. The Twins and the Royals and Nelson Cruz hit a milestone.
Reduce the magic number to three. Here's a drive right center field. High and deep to right center. Number 400 for Nelson Cruz.
That was Dick Bremer on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Minnesota goes on to win 12-8. They have control of the American League Central. You would expect the clinching to come up in the next few days. The Mets, hanging at the very fringe of the National League wildcard race, face the Reds. And Michael Conforto had a moment.
Here's the 2-0. Fastball hit deep to right field. This is going to be 31 for Conforto, way back into the right field seats. A three-run homer, Conforto's 31st of the year. That's a career high. So are his now 87 runs batted into the year. And Bauer gives up another long ball. The Mets have a 4-0 first inning lead.
Howie Rose, WCBS 880. The Mets would go on to win 6-3, but it may not matter because, man, how about those Milwaukee Brewers? Since Christian Yelich got hurt, they have responded in a big way, taking advantage of a softer schedule. They actually had a combined perfect game through 6 1/3 innings. Some of their offense came from Eric Thames.
1-0 delivery. Flees deals, and this one is hit to right center and deep. Get up! Get up! He's gonna be out of here, and Eric Thames has just hit a two-run shot. His second in the game. His 23rd of the year.
That was Bob Uecker, of course, 620 WTMJ. The Brewers go on to win 4-3, and at the end of the day, the Washington Nationals and Milwaukee in a virtual tie for the two spots, wildcard spots in the National League, far ahead of the rest of the field, largely because of what happened in Wrigley Field over the weekend.
Deep center field. The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
What an incredible weekend in the series between the Cardinals and the Cubs. The Cubs lost on Thursday, a one-run decision. Then on Friday, on Saturday, with Craig Kimbrel allowing home runs on back-to-back pitches. On Sunday, Yu Darvish was on the mound for the Cubs trying to salvage one game in the series, and he pitched great. 12 strikeouts over 8 1/3 innings, and in the bottom of the sixth inning, Cubs took the lead.
2-2 to Castellanos. Swung on, hit in the air. Deep left center, back toward the wall. It's got a chance! Gone! Cubs lead 2-1. Nicholas Castellanos with a towering home run just to the left of dead center. The season is not over yet.
Pat Hughes and the Cubs Radio Network. Season was not over yet, but maybe in the ninth inning it ended. Joe Maddon sent Yu Darvish back out of the mound to start the ninth inning. He couldn't blame him because Darvish was that good and the Cubs bullpen has been that bad. And this is what happened with the score tied.
The 2-2 pitch for Paul Goldschmidt. Goldie swings and hits it fair! Inside the third base bag down the left field line. Edmund is going to score. Goldschmidt around second base and he'll hold there with a go-ahead double in the ninth. Oh, man!
John Rooney on the Cardinals Radio Network, and you could just feel the jugular being seized by the Cardinals in that moment. Here was the call in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The 0-2. Fly ball, center field. This is caught! It's history! A Cardinals four-game sweep of the Cubs at Wrigley for the first time since 1921. St. Louis back in the postseason. First time since 2015. A Wrigley Field massacre.
Dan McLaughlin calling it like it is on the Cardinals television network. Yeah, what an amazing weekend for the St. Louis Cardinals. At the end of the day, the Cubs seven games behind the Cardinals in the National League Central. Four games behind the Brewers in the race for the wild card. Their playoff chances down to about 2%. According to Fangraphs. And before we lead off with Tim Kirchen to talk about that, summer is officially over, but there's still plenty of time left to stain your deck. And if you do, maybe you should try something that's stain-changing. Introducing Valspar Solid Color Stain. It's easy to apply, all-weather protection that brings so much color and coverage to the party, you can bring out the color of the shutters or the planters, even your eyes. You'll love it, guaranteed for 10 years. Yeah, that's stain-changing. Valspar exterior stain, only at Lowe's.
Scene heads rejoice.
Noodle alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirchen on Baseball Tonight.
That's right, and Tim Kirchen covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, I'll give you the choice, because you know we're going to talk about Cubs and Cardinals first. What an incredible series. An amazing series of events over those 4 days. Do you want to go negative first, or do you want to go positive? It's your choice.
Well, I'm sorry. I think we're going to have to go negative first because that weekend knocked the Cubs out of the playoffs. The Cardinals were going to make the playoffs no matter what with the way they played lately. So good for them. But that's the first time, you know, Buster, that any team has lost a four-game series at home with all four losses by one run in 100 years. And it happened to come against your arch rival in the final four games of the home season and games that absolutely had to be won, and they lost every one of them, at least two of them, in excruciating manner. And I think it just opens up a huge question now, which was always lingering, what now for the Cubs? What happens to Joe Maddon? What happens to the core of that team? And I think that weekend series, losing all of those games, I think it's going to open that discussion even more.
It's interesting because I would disagree with you. I think it actually answers the question about what's to come. I think if you were sitting in Theo Epstein's shoes and you were trying to decide what do we do with Joe Maddon, What are we going to do with the team? What are we going to do with the roster? I think this pushes it off the ledge. And they now, almost conscience-free, after upgrading the team significantly during the year, getting Castellanos, signing Craig Kimbrell, making all these moves and trying to do things to make this team better, for them to collapse at the end, I think all bets are off, Tim, in terms of what they do. Obviously, we've been talking about all summer Joe Maddon's status. He will not be retained as you move forward. But I also, as we talked a little bit about last week, if they traded Chris Bryant, wouldn't be a shocker. I don't think it's completely out of the question that they would consider offers for Anthony Rizzo just to change the makeup of the team. I think they'll go in and basically blow the place up. What do you think?
Well, I don't think Joe Maddon's going to be back, and blowing it up might be a little easier said than done, but I know there's been a concern there that, you know, this core has been together for a long time, and it did some miraculous things and won the World Series for the first time since 1908, but sometimes guys spend too much time together, sometimes you have to make a change. Theo knows all about making big changes in the middle of situations. No Mark Garcia Parra in Boston. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a significantly looking Cub team starting next season.
Look, you know David Ross better than I do. Tell me if you think that he's going to wind up being a serious candidate to be the manager.
I do think he'll be a serious candidate. I don't know if he'll be the next manager. I think he is mostly what the Cubs are missing. I mean, it sounds ridiculous. They're missing a backup catcher. But he was the guy who would stand up and say, what are we doing here? He would be the guy who would get in somebody's face and say, look, this just isn't good enough. And that guy, I don't think, exists on the Cubs right now. So if you were to bring him in to manage and he would bring the same things he brought as the backup catcher, then I think he's even more than a serious candidate for that job. And it should be real interesting how that is moving forward.
Let's go positive and talk about the Cardinals, as you say, clinch a playoff spot. You began to get last year when they made the change and Mike Schilt took over as manager, right away you got a sense that their culture was changing.
Yeah, and it's changed now for the last 2 months to the point where they're way better than they were early in the year. I think we all were waiting. When are the Cardinals going to get hot? When are they going to get better? Well, we are there now. And it's interesting because other than Jack Flaherty, who's been brilliant, as we know, there still aren't everyday players on that team that just say, look how great this guy is. Look how he's carried the team. I mean, Marcell Ozuna has been a good player and some other guys have done some good things. Paul DeJong's a good player, but there are no MVP candidates on this team. They've done it in so many different ways, rebuilding that bullpen, Carlos Martinez at the end, Flaherty, of course, anchoring that rotation. They've done this in a very subtle way, and suddenly they're playing awfully well.
With a really hot pitcher, they kind of remind me a little bit of, Tim, and forgive me, but I'm going to indulge myself in the team that I rooted for. My last real year as a fan of a particular team, 1988 Dodgers, where when you looked around at the everyday lineup, you know, it was okay. But you also had Oral Hershiser at the front of the rotation. The Cardinals have Jack Flaherty. So that makes a lot of things possible, I think, in a short series for that big guy to be pitching two games. I mentioned the other day he reminds me so much of John Smoltz physically and the way that he pitches and the confidence that he works with. Astros clinch on Sunday. We've been talking all year about how great they are. They, to me, objectively, they're the team to beat as we go into the postseason. Yes?
Yes, I just can't see a weakness here, Buster. I've been trying, but their bullpen is really good. The top three, obviously, in the rotation are great. The lineup, now that Correa's back, Jordan Alvarez all season now, I'm not sure there's an out in that order. I don't know how you pitch to them. I don't know how you beat those front three. And once you get into their bullpen, they're awfully good. So I think they're the best team in baseball. I think they're the team to beat. And I sense a little anger with them this spring that, you know, we should have done better last year. But remember, Jose Altuve was hurt during the postseason last year. He's not going to be hurt this year. And they're a different team when he's really playing.
All right, this is what happened on Friday. The Braves playing the Giants, top of the ninth inning. Give a listen.
0-1 pitch. popped up, shallow right center. Coming in is Acuna. He is there. That does it. And the Braves will raise another banner over Atlanta. The Atlanta Braves are division champions again, kings of the East in 2019.
Brian Snitker going back-to-back, Tim. What do you think?
I really like that team, Buster. It's impossible not to really like that team, that beautiful blend of youthful exuberance and great veteran leadership. Brian Snitker's really good at this job. Mike Soroka's come in and given them a top-of-the-rotation guy. Dallas Keuchel has added something, a real veteran presence to that rotation. Josh Donaldson, he's just a butt kicker that they brought in for 1 year, and he's been even better than we thought he would be. It's a really interesting team right now, and as much as I still think the Dodgers are the best team in the National League, I wouldn't want to play the Braves right now.
I think they got a better chance to overcome the Dodgers than they did last year. What do you think?
No doubt about that. Mike Soroka is really good, Buster, as you know. And he doesn't seem to be a guy who's just going to bail because he's a young guy and he's pitched a lot of innings this year. And again, when I talked to Brian Snitker for the last game we did with the Braves, when I asked him about Keuchel, he said, well, he looks like a number one starter to me, meaning a guy who starts game one in the playoffs. They might not have to because Soroka's been so good. And again, that bullpen, what they did at the trade deadline, at least so far, seems to be working out.
Speaking of youthful exuberance, American League wildcard race, it looks like going in the last week of the season is the most interesting of all the races that we're going to have. You've got the Indians, and you've got the Rays, and you've got the Oakland Athletics. And on Sunday Night Baseball, we have the Indians and the Phillies. The Indians on the line, one all, top of the fifth inning. Carlos Carrasco comes in. The Indians turn an incredible double play to hold the score at one all. And then in the bottom of the fifth inning, Oscar Mercado comes to the plate with two runners on base. And give a listen to when he hits a home run, what he yells. He was wearing a mic for us on Sunday Night Baseball. What he yells as he's running up the first baseline.
I mean, that is great, great. I'm going to do my best job of translating here. He said, way to go. Let's go. I'm the best in this business.
Oh, that's all right.
The 24-year-old Colombian, yeah.
I'm telling you. And I had heard that Oscar Mercado from his teammates about how much confidence he has, and I knew that the other Indians players would love it, Tim. So I went over to the edge of the Indians dugout, and I told Jason Kipnis and Shane Bieber, and they were just laughing, and they couldn't wait until after the game when they could show him that video. He probably didn't even realize he yelled that out, but when he listened to it, he goes, yeah, that's kind of how I feel. He has really helped the Indians this year.
Buster, if it weren't for Yordan Alvarez, I think Oscar Mercado would have a decent chance of winning the Rookie of the Year in the American League. That's how good he has been. And remember, he wasn't some big prospect who came up. They weren't even sure what they had. They just knew he could run a little bit, and he's done way more than that. It has not been a productive outfield, but he has been a really good player. And that enthusiasm that he plays with is... You see that with the Indians all the time. And back to that AL wildcard, Buster. I'm just hoping now we get – I think the A's are just going to win that first wild card. And wouldn't it be great if we could get a play-in game in Tampa between the Indians and the Rays? That would be a tremendous amount of fun.
Yeah, what the Indians players were told was before Sunday's game, look, you guys need to remember pack for five cities potentially – because, of course, they start this last road trip at the end of the season. They face the White Sox, and then they go to Washington to face the Nationals. As you mentioned, there could be a play-in game against Tampa Bay on Monday. Then there could be a wild card game. That could be so they could go from Tampa Bay, and if they win that game, they would go to Oakland, potentially. And then they could go from Oakland to Houston or New York to begin the division series. You know, that's sort of how crazy it is right now when the Indians – traveling, but you know, a team under the leadership of Terry Francona, they're going to be prepared for everything. We'll be hearing from Terry Francona coming up here in an interview with Boog Shambi. One of the cool things on Sunday Night Baseball, Tim, was to watch Carlos Carrasco come into the game, the reaction from the Cleveland fans. Of course, this is someone who a year ago, when there were rumors about the Indians perhaps trading a starting pitcher, you know, maybe trading a Trevor Bauer, maybe trading Corey Kluber, Carrasco. Carrasco went through his agent, Seth Levinson, and said, look, call the Indians and tell them I want to work out an extension. I want to stay here because I love it in the city of Cleveland. And then earlier this year when he was diagnosed with leukemia, you know, he goes through treatment. We saw the emotional moment at the All-Star game with his teammates standing alongside him. And as he's battled cancer, he's made repeated trips to a local children's hospital to meet with kids with cancer. This is the fifth straight year, Tim, that he's been nominated for the Roberto Clemente Award. And to see the reaction to him when he came to the game last night, a standing ovation, they get out of that jam, he gets a double play, two more innings, he's getting his velocity back. It's so cool to see. Here's Terry Francona after the game on Carlos Carrasco.
I mean, to come in at that point in the game and get that double play, I thought Freeman's turn was perfect, or we don't get him. And then to go, what, you know, two plus, that's I mean, that was the hope. But that's a big ask. He did a great job.
Does he look like he's more comfortable or consistent each time he goes out there?
Yeah, I think so. You've seen his velocity creep back up, and he's got both his breaking ball and his changeup that he can go to. Yeah, it's – I mean, that was the idea, is to try to let him get his legs under him and get comfortable and get back in that competitive mode. He's done a really good job of that.
How cool is it to see what's going on with Carlos Carrasco, Tim?
Buster, it's amazing. We did their game Friday night, and they brought him in to the most important part of a huge game, and he got gigantic outs against the Phillies on Friday night. And then they bring him back on Sunday for the same thing. So this isn't a let's just make sure we can get him into a game and make him feel good about himself before he goes home with everything he's been through. He is getting big outs for them. And he threw a couple sliders in our game on Friday night that were ridiculous. He's not just back. He's getting big outs for them. And I talked to him before the game on Friday, and he told me what he has to go through with his chemo just to keep things going. And then what he has to do workout-wise to make sure he can keep his body fit enough to pitch. It's amazing. And he said, and the goal is not just to try to win the World Series this year, but he said, the goal for me is to make sure when I come back next spring, I'm in good enough shape to be a starting pitcher again. But he's been an awfully good relief pitcher when they needed him.
Yeah, and they've also, it looks like, going to get another star back. I know you got to see Jose Ramirez take batting practice on the field on Thursday, and then I saw him on Saturday doing that. They talked about potentially activating him for Sunday night's game, but in the end, Terry Francona decided, you know what, this is not the right thing for the player. Let's take a little extra time, make sure he's okay. But it does look like there's a good chance he's going to be in the lineup on Tuesday when they face the White Sox. The Indians are off today. Over the weekend, we got news that the Padres fired manager Andy Green after four losing seasons. I don't think it's a surprise. We knew, you know, Andy's an intense guy, and we'd heard stories the last couple of years about how the players weren't necessarily enamored of that. But, Tim, this is a franchise that's had nine straight losing seasons. It's not only about Andy Green here.
Yeah, it's way more than Andy Green, and now a lot of work has to be done. But we also know, Buster, with Tatis and Machado and Paddock and all these young guys and a great farm system, this is a really, really attractive job. But it's time to stop talking about the future when you're the Padres and start to win some games, because I know the Tatis injury really hurt, but they got to do better than this. And this is way bigger than Andy Green, and I'm not surprised this move was made. Now it'll be real interesting to see who manages that team next, because that is a very attractive job.
And, Tim, I don't think they're that close. And forgive me, but I'm looking at the pitching staff, and it's so young, and it feels like that they have maybe two and a half more years of development. And, oh, by the way, the clock is ticking on the three most expensive guys on the roster. They owe $75 million for the next 3 years to Eric Hosmer and to Will Myers and to Manny Machado. This is a team, a franchise, that spent over $100 million for the first time in 2018, So I don't see them going out and getting a Garrett Cole unless ownership decides, hey, we're just going to start handing out big dollars.
Right. Well, when I say it's an attractive job, Buster, I think it's an attractive job in 2 years. But if you want it, you're going to have to go through another season where you're not going to win the division. You might not finish 500, but the thinking is when all these young kids arrive, it's going to be a good team. But it's not going to happen next year, maybe the year after that. But it's some work's got to be done there, as I said.
So when the change was made on Saturday, and there was immediate speculation about Bruce Bochy, of course, is nearing the end of his time as manager of the Giants. He's a Hall of Fame manager. But a lot of people have wondered if Boch, who managed the Padres for years, had an opportunity to go back to San Diego, would he take it? Well, we interviewed him on Friday for a podcast episode that's coming up on Tuesday. It was a great interview. He told amazing stories. But as part of that, we started off by asking him, would he want to manage again? Listen to his answer.
When I made it public that, you know, this would be it for me, I said, I really, and they're asking, you know, of course I got asked, well, do you think you'll manage again? You don't know that. I said, I don't know that until it's over and, you know, I get, you know, away from it, you know, how I'm going to be doing. And what I mean by that is my appetite for managing again. I just don't know. I felt like it was time when I made this call. I'm good with it, and I know my wife's good with it, but, you know, hey, I've been doing it so long, so I don't know if, you know, if something hits me later on, could be a year from now, whatever. I can't answer that until I walk away and have all this free time on my hand where I'm going, now what?
And, Tim, as someone who's known Bruce Bochy a long time, I got to tell you, I'm hoping he doesn't go there. I feel like that if he were to be hired as manager of the Padres, it probably would be something that would be pushed by ownership versus the front office, you know, one of the modern front offices looking at analytics and that sort of thing. And, two, I want Boch to get his moment in Cooperstown as soon as possible. What do you think?
Well, if you listen to his answer, which you did, Buster, he doesn't rule it out completely. And I find that interesting. And I had a little chat with him earlier this summer where the same thing came up and he had every chance to say, no, I'm done. And he didn't. And this spring when I talked to him, he said, look, I'm feeling great physically and I'm not a tired old man or anything like that, which was just another indication that he's not done managing. My guess is he's not going to manage anymore, and my guess is the Padres are going to take a long look at him, and it'll be very interesting to see how this works out for him. But the fact that he's leaving the door open, I find very interesting.
Tim, thanks for doing this. What a fun week this is going to be.
Oh, Buster, this is the best. Well, nothing's better than the playoffs, but the week leading into the playoffs is absolutely fabulous. As we play for playoff spots, home field advantage, it's going to be tremendous.
Over the weekend, Boog Shambi caught up with our friend Terry Francona, the manager of the Indians, and listen for the end of the interview when Francona gives Boog a hard time.
All right, you guys trying to make the playoffs. Down the stretch, pressure, you've been the last 3 years, you're no stranger to this, and yet, why do I get the sense that you still have, like, heartburn and indigestion and you're sweating this like it's the first time ever?
Well, the heartburn and indigestion's from what I ate last night.
Fair enough.
That's
fair enough.
You know what, Boog, it's hard to explain. Like, your stomach's in your throat.
Yeah.
You think you're going to win. You're not quite sure how, but you wouldn't change it for the world. And I know that doesn't sound like like a ringing endorsement, but it's just, this is what, I mean, we got a week left and we still got a chance and it's a lot of fun. Now, when you lose, it tears your heart out, but I'd rather have it be that way than be meaningless when you come down to the last week.
How hard is it watching other teams involving whether it's the Rays or the A's and you can't control it and then all of a sudden one of those games takes a U-turn?
I struggle watching the other games. I get more nervous watching those games than I do during ours because I at least feel like I got a little bit to say about our team. I mean, the players have to do it, but I'm not a good watcher.
Yeah. As far as these games down the stretch, manipulating the bullpen is a big component of it. So you have an expanded roster. What's that like for you trying to every day figure out, how am I going to get 27 outs?
You know what? On one hand, you have more pitchers, but on the other hand, they have more hitters. And we've, all year, we have kind of a matchup bullpen. You know, in an era where guys are coming in throwing a 98 to 100 and just letting it fly, we've got, you know, Oliver Perez from this side, Simber from down here, and you got to be careful because it's hard to get the right matchup you want with so many players available.
Last thing, run scoring for your group has been a problem at times, and right now you're without one of your top hitters in Jose Ramirez. When might we see him?
You know what? He had a really good day yesterday. I think we wanted to let him come in and work out today. We got an off day tomorrow when we traveled to Chicago. I think there's a pretty good chance to see him Tuesday in Chicago. Now, again, you know, we want to be fair to him. Let's see how he does, but I don't think that's an outlandish suggestion.
Okay, that's a good suggestion. We've gotten through about 3 minutes and nothing snarky and offbeat.
No,
no, none of that. You're a handsome man. Thanks for the time.
You know what? You know what was interesting to me is I didn't know your name was Jonathan. I thought that somebody, some dumbass named you Boog.
Yeah, they did, actually.
Todd Radom is on vacation this week, so we've got a pinch hitter for Cap Talk. It is Brady Farkas, the producer and host for 101.3 The Game in Burlington, Vermont, rolling in with Seattle Mariners theme music, his favorite team. Brady, how you doing?
I'm good, Buster. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and thanks for joining us. I'm gonna let you know, and you, of course, work with a show that I've been on with every week for years, The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady. But this morning, in preparation for this, I asked Troy to send me your specific information, which I generally knew, right? But I didn't know if you preferred to be brought on as executive producer or, you know, head honcho or whatever title you have. And the thing he sent back was radio host at 101.3 The Game in Burlington, Troy's older brother, but much less handsome. What's up with
that? Wow. Well, I don't know what's up with that. He's taking cheap shots across the bow. And I had to know, I want your audience to know that in order to get on the podcast, my brother, who's your producer, he wouldn't let me on. I had to go over his head straight to you. So thank you for playing ball with me, Buster.
Yeah, no problem. And as we start here, I think it's appropriate with two brothers in this segment. Brady, what's the meanest thing you've ever done to your little brother?
Oh, the meanest thing I've ever done to him? Well, there was a wiffle ball game probably 2002-ish or so. We used to play wiffle ball every day of the summer. We had our own season. We had a standings board. We kept statistics. We even sang God Bless America before opening day. It was the World Series. Troy was about 7 years old. He did not play very well, and he did something I didn't like, and I sent him up to the trees to think about what he had done. He probably cost us a run, Buster.
Wow.
All right. I disagree. I can remember exactly what the meanest thing you ever did to me was. I remember.
What's
so
that?
This was, I was in sixth grade. I think you were a senior in high school. You had your girlfriend at the house and you guys were upstairs and you locked me in the basement for the night. You didn't let me come upstairs. I don't know why, but you didn't let me come up.
It wasn't the entire night. You kept coming up to get cookies or something. I just didn't want you around for that time.
I can't imagine why. I'm still mad about it.
Oh, man. See, here's the cool thing is that I'm like right in the middle. I'm the number two out of four siblings. And so I can respect both of your positions, right? I've been the younger brother and I've been the older brother. And so I knew that there were grievances that will never be settled as long as you move forward. All right. Brady, the reason why you're jumping in is because you have a special passion for Cap Talk. You listen to us every week with Todd Radom. You're stepping in here and you want to talk about the six hats from the 90s that need to be brought back. What do you got?
Yeah, Buster, first off, the 90s was great because it was the alternate jersey revolution. So not everybody likes that. I happen to like the alternate jersey revolution. Baseball needs more two-tone hats. There aren't enough teams wearing two-tone hats anymore as their primary hat. You see it occasionally. The Astros wear them. The Nationals do. The Mariners at home. The A's at home. There are a few, but the 90s brought about a lot of two-tone hats, specifically six alternate two-tone hats that need to be brought back into circulation. I'm going to start with the homer take. I'm going to start with my Mariners. They need to bring back the 1994-95 teal hat, the teal top with the navy blue bill that pairs with the teal jerseys. They wear the teal jerseys now still for Friday home games. I think Monday, Friday home games, but they wear them with the blue hat. They need the teal hat to go with it.
No.
No, they do.
Absolutely not.
Bennis, Ken Griffey Jr., Doug Strange hat. They need those.
Nope. Hate them.
Vito, what else you got?
Okay. What's your next one?
Okay. The 1997 Blue Jays, where it was the after Joe Carter and prior to height of Roy Halladay. So it was in that Pat Henkin and Roger Clemens era, where it was the royal blue hat with the red bill and the Blue Jay inside of the maple leaf. It's a forgotten Blue Jays hat, 97 to 2002, Buster.
Yeah, when you mentioned this to me last week and I looked this up, I was like, no, it's terrible. What are you talking about? I can't stand that. Troy, what do you think?
The Blue Jays hats, the ones that they have right now, are so good. I'd even take the early 2000s ones, like the chrome black look that they had over that hat. What else you got?
No, that Blue Jays hat is good. I also call it the Shannon Stewart Blue Jays hat.
Ooh,
so
good call.
Okay.
Then we're moving to the mid-90s, late-90s Pirates hat. So Pirates have always been about tradition, but in the 90s, and they've also brought it back a couple times in the 2000s, they have a black hat with a red bill, and then the P is yellow with a red outline around the P. Buster, they threw a no-hitter with this hat in 97, and the game started by Francisco Cordova.
Yeah, but they won a World Series back with the 1979 caps. If you're going to bring back a Pirates cap, to me, it would be the We Are Family caps. What do you got, Troy?
I actually like this hat. This is the best one on the list so far that you referred to. I'm not a huge fan of the Pirates hat the way it is, but that little red brim, I think, adds a nice touch to it.
Okay.
Well, Buster, I said caps of the 90s. You're giving me the We Are Family's hat from the 70s, the 90s specifically.
Well, I don't like these. I have your list in front of me, and I got to tell you, no. Give us the Tigers one, because that's the one that offends me the most.
Oh, God.
Well, this Tigers hat is classic. 94 to 97, I believe, was the little use of this Tigers hat. The navy blue top with the orange bill and the tiger walking out of the D. I call this one the Mickey Tettleton, Travis Fryman Tigers ears.
I can't tell you how much I hate this one, because I look at all the logos in baseball, and that just the old style English D, I love it. It's my favorite one of any logo in baseball. The idea that you would be wanting to have stuff coming out of it, I can't stand that.
I can't wait to hear what Todd Radin has to say, because he's told us how much he dislikes this hat, and he's going to come at you, Brady, so I hope you're ready.
This hat is, I told you, I grew up in the 90s. I was born in 89, but I grew up in the 90s. The alternate jersey craze, this is where it started. So this is where the fun happens. Number five, little used hat. I'm probably the least attached to this hat, but the Royals of the mid-90s, they had an alternate jersey where it was actually their gray away jerseys, but they had an alternate hat that was a gray top with a royal blue bill and a blue KC. This hat, again, I'm the least attached to it of anything on my list, but I think this was early Carlos Beltran, Mike Sweeney years.
Yeah, when they were losing like 120 games a year. I don't think Royals fans would back you up on this one. So we vote no on this one.
Tell us
about the 97 Mets Ice Cream Man hats.
Yes, the Ice Cream Man hats. This is the white whale of all 97 hats, Buster. This is the hat that you can't even find on the internet. It's so remote. 1997, the Mets actually had a good season, but they debuted this Ice Cream Man hat where they had all white jerseys, snow white jerseys, and then the hat that went with it was a white top and a royal blue bill with a royal blue NY. They only used it in 97. I think it was only Monday home games, so therefore I think they wore it less than 20 times, and they never wore it again. Then they went to the famous black jerseys the year after that in 98. If you go on the internet, there are only two pictures I can even find of this hat. One is a photo shoot with Bernard Gilkey. The other is a game shot of Rick Reed. And this hat, my college roommate Nick and I, shout out Nick, we went through and for years tried to find this specific hat. We could not find it. We scoured the bowels of the internet trying to find this hat for years, and eventually it took us to some place called E-Cap City, and it was finally found, but they haven't worn it again. They only wore it for 16 games, and it can't be found on the internet. This is the white whale of 90s hats that need to be brought back.
Yeah, and I can tell you why it was never brought back, because it was god-awful. I covered the 97 Mets for the New York Times, and I remember when they first broke out those hats, like the look on the players' faces, like, really? And Carlos Baerga was the guy who stood out to me, because Carlos was, you know, he's a little thicker than some other players, and so he had that white cap on his head. It just looked ridiculous. And you're advocating for the return of this stuff?
Of course I'm advocating for the return of this stuff. What's old, Buster, what's old is new again. You see teams in all sports going back to throwbacks. Heck, the New York Jets keep bouncing back and forth between the Joe Namath Jets and the Boomer Esiason Jets. They just keep rotating between the two. What's old is new again, Buster.
No, hate it. Absolutely hate it. Brady, I'm so disappointed. Because I've been working with you a lot longer than Troy. I don't want to like your list, but you picked up some of the most hideous hats. In the history of baseball.
The two-tone hat needs to be brought back. I mean, Troy's a Rangers fan. The Rangers, for a while, were going with the vest where they had the blue hat with the black bill. A lot of teams had two-tone hats in the 90s. We need to get back to that. The Reds had two-tone hats where it was red with black, black with red. The Twins have had two-tone hats. We need more of them, Buster.
No. Nope. I'm looking at all the hats that I love and I collect, and they're all the one-tone thing. But again, I'm colorblind, so I'm probably not the best possible judge. Brady, before we go, I want to get from Troy, and this will be a big test for you as a sibling. So you got locked in the basement, and you weren't happy about it, and your brother was upstairs with his girlfriend. Did you tattle on him afterward to your parents?
I think I did.
I was. I probably wasn't happy about it for a week.
Yeah, and do you regret that at this point, Troy, or was it kind of like, yeah, type of moment when he got grounded?
No, I mean, I really didn't like the girlfriend at the time, so maybe I was kind of subplotting. Okay, maybe my parents find out about this, they get mad, they say, hey, you can't see this girl anymore, and then it all ends up blowing up in his face, and Brady ends up spending more time with me as a result.
Wow.
And that all worked, so the subplot worked well, so good job.
Good job, Brady, not so much with the alternative. I can't believe I hate your list as much as I do, but... You know what? Again, you see colors, so you know more than I do. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Okay, Buster, solid round of Bleacher Tweets this morning after another fine weekend in baseball. First one comes from our friend P.K. Steinberg. At P.K. Steinberg. Are Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies a better 1-2 combo than Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz were for the Red Sox? Or perhaps will they be?
P.K., you know I love you. You come up with some of the great questions. This is not one of them. I think you should borrow one of the hoodies that's passing through here as I sit here at Gate B2, some of the sunglasses, and reconsider the question. Take those statistics for Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz and line them up against Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies. I think they got a little bit more work to go before we get to that point. What do you think, Troy? You with me or think I'm being too hard?
Yeah, no, Buster, I fully agree with you. Even just from a name recognition standpoint, I don't think your casual fan may not even know who Ozzie Albies is yet, but Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz are superstars. Next one comes from Josh Bien at Josh Bien. Why do teams fire the manager with around 10 days to go in the season? What's the point of not letting him finish out the year?
I think that maybe a different question to ask would be, if you know you're going to fire him, why keep him around? And it might be, and I don't know exactly what the conversation was between A.J. Preller and Andy Green, but it might be that A.J. told him, hey, you know what, we're going to make a change. How do you want to handle this? Who knows how that conversation went. But a lot of times in those type of situations, the GM will actually give the manager the opportunity just to finish off the season. Or, you know what? Maybe you just want to change the vibe and start to signal to your fans that change is coming.
Next one comes from CrossFit School of Sweat, at School of Sweat. Since you're around the guys, Buster, what kind of attitude do the teams hovering around 500 have toward these last couple of weeks? Is it important for them to finish over 500, or do they not really care if they don't make the postseason?
It's interesting because I do feel like that these last days for the teams that are not in contention sort of is something that reflects the character of the individual players. Some players will actually be really good at pushing through because their attitude is, look, you don't want to give an at-bat. You don't want to give up an inning, an opportunity to be in the major leagues. And other guys, no doubt about it. They're like ready to hit the offseason. And they just roll through. And sometimes, you know, I've covered teams where you could see the quality of at-bats really erode for particular players. They got to the end. They were like the kids at the end of you know, a school year in elementary school where they're not finishing the work. They're like, let's get into the off season.
JP at Pinstripe Spud 2. After dominant starts from Jack Flaherty and Masahiro Tanaka, what is your top five list of starters from the projected playoff teams?
JP, that's a great question, because as I was going through it, there's some great candidates. And Troy, see if you agree with me. Verlander and Cole, 1 and 2. I think Shane Bieber. He's been awesome, and he just seems to be getting better and better and better. Cleveland's number one. I do think Flaherty at that point probably would be 3 or 4, and Max Scherzer. Those would be my five, but man, Sean Manaea has pitched great of late. Charlie Morton, I think you'd have a lot of faith in because of his history. Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw. Man, there are a lot of candidates.
That shows you how good some of these pitchers have been when you leave Clayton Kershaw out of your top five.
Yes.
Last one this morning from Eric E. at Esoteric Eric Zero. Hey, Troy and Buster. If you could pick one MLB player to bet the farm on in a league-wide arm wrestling championship, who would you pick? Eric says his money's on Eric Thames.
Yeah, I think that probably would be a good choice. I'd also be intrigued by Pete Alonso, because all I've ever heard about is he has this ridiculous strength. Who was it? Vanderbilt coach Tim Corbin sent me an email and compared him to Paul Bunyan. Like, he has the strength that he doesn't even realize it. And Troy, you remember that moment in spring training, exhibition game against the Astros, and Josh Reddick was running to first base and a throw to Pete Alonso, and Josh Reddick ran into Pete Alonso and just dropped to the ground. And it was like Pete Alonso was a brick wall, and Josh Reddick just fell right to the ground.
I'm also going to go down the rookie path. I'm going to pick Vlad Guerrero Jr. That's not a guy I would want to face in arm wrestling. That was the guy that first came into my mind. Great question this morning, Eric. The rest of you, thank you for using Bleacher Tweets, hashtag Bleacher Tweets every day up and through the playoffs.
That's it for today. My thanks to Terry Francona and to Boog Shambi and to Tim Kirchin and to Brady and Troy Farkas. And Troy, because you're the producer of the show, you get the last word against your brother.
Okay. Wow.
Get anything? Or did you feel like you left it on the table in our segment?
I think I left it all out there. But Brady, it was fun having you on, but I'm not sure if you're welcome back again.
Yeah, of course Brady's welcome back again. You know, you get the last word in this segment, but, you know, I'm the one who can tell you whether or not he's invited back. Come on, Troy. Let's go. Be nice to your brother. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.